So let's get back to our presentation here. And I need to adjust you guys a little bit so that I can see this better. So what do you do to keep them working together at the gig? Well, it's not too complex. You have chargers for the tablets, et cetera, and you can either use wall chargers or battery chargers. Somebody's mic is on, I think, still. You need to keep in mind that digital consoles are computers with varying AC source power. They need a UPS, uninterruptible power supply, or they will likely reboot from uncontrollable line voltage drops. And what I mean by that is stuff when you're plugged in, like in a bar especially, or someplace like that that has refrigerators that come on, those guys kick in and the voltage goes down. On the Behringer consoles, if it's down below, I think it's 85 volts for more than a quarter of a cycle of the sine wave, I guess you can't see my hands waving around, then it'll reboot, the console will reboot. So you've got to have a UPS. There's a couple of different types of UPSs. There's the kind that have simulated sine waves, which are light and cheap, meaning that the output of it is not a smooth sine wave like it is coming from the dam or the power source. It's kind of jaggedy and is on the average a sine wave, but there's a lot of stuff around that. Those are in a number of shapes and sizes. These are a couple that I use. One is $38, under $40 anyway, and it's a little bit of a problem to mount it to a rack, but I use plumber's tape with electrical tape around it and put that over the parts that aren't outlets, and that seems to work okay. And then there's a rack mount version, which is triple the money or whatever multiple that is of the cheaper one. They both work just fine. The rack mount one, you put rack ears on it and strap, put it in a rack and then strap the back down so that if you turn it upside down, it doesn't leverage on the whole thing. I mount these at the bottom of a rack generally so they can't fall down any, but I don't want them to flop up. The other kind is double conversion, which is heavy and expensive. And I'll show you me so that I can wave my hands around. Double conversions work where the AC power source from the wall goes into an inverter inside the device, and it's converted there from AC to DC. The DC is connected to a battery inside the unit. All of these have batteries, but on the double conversion one, it's connected to a battery, and then there's another inverter that converts from DC to AC, and then you plug into the AC port on the other side. So the battery is always part of the picture on that one, and it's always doing its thing, and there's no interruption, and it's somehow they make them work so that the sine wave is pretty perfect. The other ones, you're running off the wall pretty much, and the battery part kicks in when the power goes out. So there's a little bit of a gap. Those are both heavier and more expensive. This is a considerable multiple of what they the other ones cost. And the other two, the little guy was 3.5 pounds and the rack mount one was 19 pounds. This one is 29 pounds. And I don't have this one, but I have some others and they're like 40 pounds. And it's like lugging a PSA2 crown amp around. They're heavy. So if you do that stuff, your gear should keep on working while you're at the gig. Now we're going to look at implementation of these principles that I've been telling you about with various console form factors, and we're going to see what other gear you need to accomplish the above. And we're going to do that by I'm going to show you a movie of these, or several movies, of these different consoles forms in cases and how you would lug them around. This one here is a Midas M32R with Wi-Fi control. This console would likely be located front of house. And the front and back look the same when it's closed. I put a back on it after I get things connected up, and this is like a doghouse. And you'll see the Wi-Fi, the airport inside there, and it seems to work just fine through the wood and metal, even though it's low, relatively low to the ground compared to putting it up on a tower or something. But without a lot of people there for the sound check, it seems to work just fine. So here we go. I wanted to show you a way to integrate a rack mount full capability mixer with all this Wi-Fi stuff. So this is probably a 20 or 24 space rack. It's a three door rack, front, back, and top. It's especially for rack mount mixers. Here it is with the top and front removed, and we'll zoom in a little bit and you can see the mixer. And this is very similar to the mixer that I'm talking through right now to you, an M32R. It's got two banks of eight faders. They can be looking at any part of the console. There's a little CD, DVD player that is for background music. That's some other stuff that I'll address in a little while.
But note the keys, and the holes with space, the sliders in it. You'll see that.
And there's a UPS down at the bottom. Looking at the back with the cover off, we see first the back of the mixer up on top. And this is typically used with a snake, just because this will be located out in the field somewhere or something. You plug one part of the snake into one of these AES-50 guys. You plug the power into that plug and fire it up and you're ready to go. So the interesting part here is that up above right there, I've got the Airport Express on top, the switch mounted below that. I don't know if you're going to be able to see it, but there's some stuff from the hardware store, some angle brackets and stuff mounted to the switcher and then over to, I think, the rack rail that's behind this loom. And there's some power outlets down there for outboard stuff. That's about it in the back of this rack, except for these things in the middle, and I'm going to take 30 seconds and go over that. Now we're back on the front, looking at the front of the mixer, and these things on the outside are attached by some keys over screw heads to the side of the mixer. They go on really fast, and these are a Behringer product that is eight faders, as well as a bunch of other stuff, but the faders are the most important part to my way of thinking. And they connect via Ethernet cable to the console and give you eight more faders each so that you can have 32 faders and not have to switch so many layers. So you can have this outboard one connected to channels 1 through 8. This next one connected to 9 through 16. The next one connected to 17 to 24. And this right-hand one can stay on DCAs so that you can group things to control them by groups. And if you have to switch around or set EQ or anything, you do that in the middle and it's easy to jump around there, but at least some of the faders can stay constantly available to you. I've only used this twice at gigs and it was really, really great. I loved it. I had a guy make the shelves for me, but other than that, it's all stock pieces. So there you go.
All right. Any questions on that? That guy wouldn't shut up, would he? So I couldn't get a word edgewise.
Hey, Dan, yeah. Bob asked if you were, what you're powering with the UPS.
The mixer, the Wi-Fi stuff, and that is it in that rack.
Are those all wall wart kind of things?
Oh, well, the mixer wouldn't be. Okay, I see. But not the power amps.
There's no power amps in that rack. The power
amps are in another rack.
Those are somewhere else. Yeah, the power amps use too much power. It would be a real costly proposition to have UPSs that are big enough for those.
Of course. You'd hear it just as the caps are discharging. By the way, the crappy old cheap UPSs, that waveform's called a modified square wave. I think the industry modified sine wave, but it's those sharp edges.
Yes.
Be okay, but the sharp edges, you hear that. It's awful.
Hear it in what?
Well, you can get into the audio. It's like making it interferes with radios and stuff. The sine wave is the way to go. Plus, there's more, but they can be noisy.
This is a good thing. You're a good person to talk about this with. Your company or other company made UPSs of some sort, right?
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff we do.
Yeah, so people argue that those devices, the modified sine waves, will ruin your power supply.
No, I don't think that. I don't think that, but it'll make a lot.
I don't think so either.
It'll make a lot of noise. And the peak voltage, they regulate the RMS voltage. So, which is, you said average, but, you know, sort of the same thing. The RMS voltage is 120 volts, but since it's not a sine wave, since it's a square wave, basically, the peak voltage is not as high. So if it depends on what it's powering. Most things it powers just fine, but if they're susceptible to noise, you'll hear the buzz badly.
And when those things are actively working, where you would hear the noise is only when it's dropping, the line voltage is dropping below.
No, the 60 hertz that it makes is noisy. Well, yeah, you'll hear when the transfer time is what you're talking about, when it switches over.
When the voltage is all hunky-dory in the source, it seems like those are not working at all. They're just passing through the wall voltage.
Yeah, right. And that's right. But when the line, when the AC grid goes away,
yes,
the real UPS, like you said, it had the double conversion one, there is no transfer time. There's nothing dropped. And those would tend to be a real sine wave, just like
this. Yes. Yes.
And they're synchronized with the grid.
But the point of this one is to help you when there's a problem and be out of the picture when there's not a problem, the cheap ones. And so I'm not going to hear that 60 hertz tone unless I've lost power.
Right, exactly.
And if the choice is losing power and having a 60 hertz tone.
A little bit.
Or losing power and having everything go off, I know which one I'm going to pick.
Yeah, you're probably better.
I know which one I'm going to pick there.
But yes.
And the fact that they're so cheap and so light is nice.
Yeah, and you may not even hear the noise anymore. 1990, I built a little wall wart that made a sine wave to run the Symmetrics little stereo preamplifier, because using a square wave inverter to run it on the wall wart that went into the Symmetrics, you could hear it. It was awful. So I made a little 16-volt AC, just for a battery operated. They were recording things out in the middle of nowhere. Timbuktu, worked fine. But square waves can be noisy, but it may reject that noise, and you may not even hear it.
Yeah. Thanks, Bob. You're the expert on this stuff.
The digital desks, digital desks are computers and very high frequency operating computers, so they tend to be very immune to, you know, the old square wave thing and all the rest of it.
Well, they can be.
Yeah, most digital desks won't even react to a mobile phone, you know.
Well, anything, but they can if they're designed crappily. That's all I'm saying. Maybe I haven't hooked anything up lately, but anything with an analog input or an analog output, if it gets too close to the line, AC line or something, it could induce something. If you wanted to, it probably wouldn't be too hard, but the digital stuff is, luckily really high frequency, and that doesn't interfere with anything, but hopefully they've designed it well.
Great, thanks. Any other comments?
Great discussion. John Kasperk says cheap UPSs will generate noise on the supply lines that can get into the audio, depending on electronics power supply quality, high harmonics of 60 hertz, or switching frequency.
Yeah, it's the sharp edges. But if the stuff is designed, like Gordon was saying, a lot of the stuff these days is probably doesn't hear that. You know, it's semi-immune to it. And some stuff, if it's not designed properly, it can be it might hear it. And it doesn't just make 60 hertz. It makes 60, 120, 180, all the odd harmonics. It's like a square wave.
Right.
I just remember 30 years ago, it was awful.
Okay.
And is this most applicable to like power amps, are we talking about? Because
The noise induced?
Yeah, because I've never, you know, doing the digital stuff, I've never had a problem.
No, it's completely different than digital switching logic. That stuff, anything that's running at high frequencies, I mean, 60 hertz is low. It's like a bass note. You can hear all its harmonics. Anything that's running at megahertz or hundreds of kilohertz or gigahertz, you're not going to hear that.
What about wireless mics, receivers that are nearby?
Well, you know, as you go up in frequency, you know, AM radio is real sensitive to that crap. Then you go up in frequency, you know, wireless mics or UHF or something, you know, it doesn't tend to get into that band very much.
Okay.
Or the mics well outweigh the signal from the noise at that frequency.
Okay, great. Thank you. So should we move on here? Anything else before we go?
Nothing else on the list.
Okay. Here's another movie with the X32 rack. And this is confusing to me because rack means equipment rack to me. But in this case, it's also the name of the mixer. So we'll call it a rack as well. Here's a 10 space rack with two X32 racks in it. And you can see that the face of these two, and again, one is a spare and one is the one in use. Bottom one is usually the spare and the top one's in use. The screen is pretty much the same as a regular console, albeit a little bit smaller, and it's got all the same controls around as a regular console and a couple of controls off on the left and right. So you sort of could do a show on this, and people have, but it's certainly much easier to use a tablet. Below that second mixer, there's a power strip so that everything stays on the front. This is how this one travels with the power cord or the power strip coiled up under here and the loom for the airport expresses kind of coiled in there. This blue cord is an extra cord for jumping to get more inputs. And we'll zoom in a little bit on that. I'll clear that stuff out. And then here's with the loom out and the power cord out. The loom is probably 15 or 20 feet long so that I can put the rack behind stage, behind the proscenium or something. And the UPS is at the bottom there, and the active X32 rack is up above there. The remote port that goes to the Airport Expresses is unplugged for travel because it's kind of in the way there. And the aux-ins up there have the AirPlay from the Airport Express plugged into them so that it can play music through the PA for breaks or something. It's not really good for cues, but it's great for breaks. All right, that's it. Questions on that one?
Hey, I have a question about the redundancy system where you have two boards or two mixers.
It's not automatic, if that's your question.
Well, I was going to ask, because I think I might ask you that before, but is there a device that would make that an automatic switch? Because, I mean, I know that, you know, like in the TV studios, they've got all the digital video going. If one machine goes down, it just knocks it over to the next one. Do they have a gadget like that for audio?
I'm certainly not aware of one, and certainly not a device that would take a bunch of mic cables and swap them over to another unused.
Yeah, it seems like most of the digital boards, I know the Allen and Heath stuff, I mean, it's everything's internal routing. So it just seems like there could be, just a question. I thought you might know.
Anybody else? I don't know. Go ahead.
Seems like some of the advantage of having second entire pieces that you've got redundant connectors and, you know, anything could break, right? Including the connectors. So having the whole piece there makes sense. Yeah.
And if there's a power surge or something that where the neutral goes out and all of your gear blows up, and I won't tell you how I know this, but having something that's unplugged and sitting there is helpful if you have that situation.
Been there.
Go ahead.
I've been there.
Yeah. It's an unhappy place to visit. Okay, let's go to the next one. This is a core, so you'll see two cores in the middle there. All right, this is my newest conglomeration of console. We see the amps up here.
the two X32 cores. One would be in use, the other would be a spare and not plugged into anything. You can just barely see that there's a USB stick in this socket here. So this is two S16s there, 16 inputs, 8 outputs. And the top 8 outputs are for monitors. Most of the gigs this would be used on would only have 4, but there's a spare and possibility of 8. And then a spare S16 down here at the bottom of that pile. And then there's a space missing a patch panel for the amplifiers outputs to plug into. So all the stuff, all the inputs and outputs are on the front. And then this bottom thing is a UPS, a rack mounted uninterruptible power supply. Here's the back of it for travel. I got the doors off, of course. And we can see up at the top, there is the tube, the backs of the two amplifiers. And over here on this left side is the switch with an input color-coded, comes from the mixer. The other one goes to Airport Expresses there for travel. They're hanging off a strap that I've got up there. Over on the right here, and also in the front, is a light, because I'm always working in the dark. And I found these little USB lights, USB powered lights, that are warm LEDs, and it's LEDs the whole size of it there. And this is what they look like on Amazon. And that's this rack. It would never travel on its top. This would roll into the in out of the truck. All right. Any thoughts on that one? Okay. Here's another one. This is the smallest one that I got. And I should tell you that this is the tiniest package of digital console that I could find when I needed to build this. I got a offer from a client to do sound for a concert series, and it's a coffee company, and they were going to provide a place for students at a performance academy run by a nonprofit around here to perform, and a pretty low-key situation. And the spec was to have a sound system that they wouldn't see, and that they also wouldn't be heard. They wouldn't hear it because they don't want to interrupt the transactions of the baristas. And that was kind of perplexing, but they were quite happy to pay for this. And I said, sure, I'll do it. So I started off with some Meyer MM4s, which are a little 4-inch cube speaker with 1 4-inch driver per side. And this rack that I came up with the XR18 console in it. And it worked good. And we'll get into more of that later. So this here is the smallest digital mixer that Behringer makes. Well, that isn't quite true, but it's close. It's the smallest one I could find when I got it that would do what I wanted it to. This little 4-space rack is the entirety of it. And let's open it up. Okay, first you see that this is really packed tight. This is the mixer itself, from this rail to this rail. This is a little patch panel that I made to make it easier. Power down here, and an uninterruptible power supply UPS down below here. And let's plug this in using the handy cord that I always take to gigs that hangs from the ceiling. And we'll plug it in. And you see the light went on. And let's turn the UPS on. Makes a little beep. And that's ready to go. So I'm going to open this up. This lid has a piece of Tough-Ac, not plexiglass. Tough-Ac doesn't break. Plexiglass will. This thing here is my an Airport Express, and it's got some connections on it and a little bundle to look nice, and you want to hang this high. And we've already seen this part, so I'm going to mute it and talk over it for a second. That the light obviously came on there, and he's going to plug in here now. There's three connectors. One is a power for the Airport Express. One is the control signal, EtherCon, to the Airport Express. And this is an audio return from the AirPlay feature on the Airport Express, so that it's a three-pin XLR, and it's two ungrounded signals, left and right, and then a ground. So I just plug that in to the XLR, plug the EtherCon into the EtherCon, and plug the AC into an AC cord that's coming off of the UPS. And then I hang this guy somewhere. Where do I hang it? To this little strap for strain relief. And to show it's a little different than that, because this is usually hanging up, but we'll put that there. In this lid, there are some extra connectors, and this is a spare power supply for the switch that's in the back. Here is a spare short stereo eighth inch to 2/4 inch for an emergency if that the built-in one goes bad. Often I'll use this bolt to attach to the top of a speaker, because they or bottom, and then hang the Airport Express off of that. The back lid, as you'll see here, has the spare Airport Express there, a power cable, an extension cable for both the for all three of the wires on this thing, all of this stuff, spares of that in case I need to run the mixer from around a corner or something. These tapes indicated something at some point, but they're not. Actually, what they're indicating are that somebody with an Android mix pad put some channels on subgroups, and the iPad doesn't have subgroups. So until I could get in there with a laptop and change that around, I couldn't use those channels. So I had them taped over. This over here is the access point. This thing has a built-in Wi-Fi network that would replace the Airport Express, but they neglected to put security on it, so you really don't want to use it. I'm connected via EtherCon plug, is which the connects up to the Airport Express is connected over here, and you can probably see that that guy is dancing around. Connector inputs, so you can either plug 1/4 inch or microphone cables in there, so you can see I've got, this is where the AirPlay is coming out of. Label every mixer so I know what the number is on it. And here are the outputs, which are upside down for Behringer reasons. And the other thing I wanted to show you on this mixer is that these guys are real cheap. All of these things are. And my spare mixer in this situation is in the back here. Let me see if I can, it's in the back. And this one has to be mounted upside down because the connectors, power connectors, are on this side. So that doesn't really matter. That just means you would plug in backwards. And over here is the switch that is lighting up. I think you can see to indicate activity. And that's what lets, again, with all of the Behringer mixers, I've found that I need a switch between the Airport Express and this, and that's the location of that. So that's a pretty tidy little package that works pretty well. It does have a couple of shortcomings, one of which is that there's no delays on any of the outputs. So if you're needing to line up speakers, you're going to have a hard time doing that with this mixer. But for real tight situations where you've got no time to set up and no place to put anything, this thing works really well. I can do a setup of the entire sound system at these gigs in 15 minutes. Okay, and any comments about that? Not that you have to. So the next thing I'm going to show you is a 8x time lapse of setting up the system. And it's actually shorter than 15 minutes. I put time code on this, and obviously I don't know how to do time code because it came out 4 hours and 24 seconds. It's hours, minutes, seconds, and frames there. So disregard the 4 and forget the 24 seconds from the total. And there's no sound, so I'll talk over it here. I do one push with this gig, or with these gigs, and that gets me in real fast, and the strap holds it all together so it doesn't move. I got them to change from, to let me change from Meyer MM4s to Meyer UPJs, which are a much more robust speaker, and they have threaded holes on top and bottom, which is so I can hang it either on the top or the bottom, the airport, the Wi-Fi. And that case has some compartments in it, so everything is organized appropriately. And that's all in one cable, power con, and XLR to the speakers. They're all self-powered, if you didn't know that. The mic stands are separated, the booms are separate from the bottom part because they don't fit in together into that space that I have in that case that I already had. And that's a Meyer UPM 1P on, as a monitor on some legs to tilt it. We're done with that, and I'm going to try to show you the airport AirPlay here, but that didn't quite work. But I use AirPlay to test all the speakers and make sure it's all working. And I talk into the mic to make sure it's working, and there it's done. So that's 12 minutes and 13 seconds, which is a, including, I made a whole bunch of mistakes because I'm out of practice doing this. So that's my fast PA. And the final movie that we have here is doing a sound check with a tablet. And I got to tell you that I pulled a fast one on you because even though the XR mixer is sitting here and we set up that, I don't really want to go into the XR iPad app. I showed you the X32 or M32 app, so we're going to, we're patched over to the M32R, and that's what you'll be hearing. That's my wife Kathy is a piano teacher, and she was going to be the music person here, but it's hard to get a piano where I am in now. So she knows 4 chords on a ukulele, and that's what we're going to see in here. Okay, so we'll get your vocal first.
Check. Check. Mm-hmm. Check. 1, 2. Check. 1, 2.
Okay, there's a little bit of a hollowness.
Check.
Go ahead.
Check. 1, 2. Check.
Okay. And let's do your monitor now.
Check.
Oh, wait, let me turn the main off. Okay.
Check, check, check. 1, that's good.
Okay. And then the ukulele. Get your monitor. OK.
Okay. That's curious sounding. Whoop. Here, let me look at that. Sounded like it was up in there somewhere. Are you hearing that?
Yeah, I hear it.
Okay. Okay, and let me get the some mains going here. Play again. And let's do some reverb on that. Okay. Are the vocal and the instrument roughly in balance?
Let's see. C. I think the vocal is a little high.
Yeah, how's that?
Let me listen to that. C. A minor. Yeah, that's better.
Okay. Great. That's good for a start then.
Good.
Thanks, dear. All right, so that's pretty much the presentation. Any thoughts on that? Questions?
It's a great job, Dan. Make sure you look through the comments later, because as people kind of had to check out, they said things, and people who are just saying nice things about you. So if you want your ego boosted a little bit.
Well, gee, that's nice.
It's awesome. You did a great job, man.
That's what comes from inviting your friends, I guess. Jeez, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Dan. Yeah, I admire your backup systems and also the almost MacGyver-like contraptions that you've got to make things so tight. It's inspiring. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. This has been really a treat for me. It's been ridiculously complex, this video stuff. Do you want to see the video rig before you go? Or before we wrap it up here?
Sure.
Yes, yes. They all laughed when he sat down with his tiny tablet, but they're not laughing anymore.
So.
Wow.
Impressive.
Nice.
So what's happening here is this is the audio console, and in hindsight I could have gotten away with just a tablet control, but I wasn't sure what I was getting into, so I wanted to have the faders there. And
so are you using a software switcher then, or did you buy a little hardware like a Blackmagic Design hardware?
Yeah, this is a Blackmagic
design.
This is the studio ATM studio production studio HD, which is these push buttons,
right?
And it lets you, can you see that there's red? I guess that doesn't coming through very well, but there's a red one which shows the active one, and a green one which shows the next, and there's a little button that you press to switch back and forth between them.
Is that two sources on that switcher?
It can do 8 sources.
Oh, awesome.
It's pretty crazy.
4 HDMI and 4 SDI.
Yes, and I don't have any SDI equipment, so I got little adapters to change them all over to HDMI. And I can show you the back too, maybe. But it was funny because when one of the run-throughs that we did, people said that they wanted to see me more than just the slides, which was the first time anybody's ever said anything like that to me. And the way I had it set up, it was way over here somewhere. So every time I changed, I had to do that. And so after that run through, I took everything apart and put it over here. And I don't know if you can see, but I made it so that I can come back and I hit something. And then my pinky goes over, and I made a little button
to touch the button, to be able to switch it without necessarily looking at it, although that didn't quite work out so well. And then there's another gizmo. Whoops, let me go back to that scene. There's another gizmo over here, which is also a Blackmagic thing, the Ultra Studio HD Mini, which is supposed to advertised as being able to simulate a webcam so that when you connect to a computer, it will then broadcast and you don't need anything else. But I gotta say, I bought these from the DVE store, and this guy Thomas there was super, super helpful and spent literally hours with me helping me figure out how to get these things to work together. These are two separate units, and you have to come out with a cable from the switcher and go into this guy. And this guy over here is only powered by a Thunderbolt 3 from a computer, and a Thunderbolt 2 will not work. So my only Thunderbolt 3 computer is this Mac Mini that's in here. And so I had to get the cable. And no matter what we did, this thing would not talk directly to the internet, YouTube Live. And no matter what we did later, we got it to work with Zoom through this Mac Mini, but it doesn't register as a camera in Zoom. So that's why there's no thumbnail for me there. The only time you can see me is when I'm seizing the screen, sharing the screen, and running this big thing here. And the other thing that I discovered was that this setup doesn't register as a separate display on the presentation computer. So usually when you're doing a presentation, in my experience, you have your main slide on the other display, the second display, and on your computer, you're looking at the next slide and your presenter notes. And I couldn't have that. So I had to go through with another computer and put all my presenter notes on this and then hit the space bar simultaneously every single time there was a change so that I'd know what was coming up here. So that was crazy. This screen over here is connected to the switcher, so you can see all of your sources here as well as the preview screen and the program, the live one there. This one over here is connected to my computer so that I can see you guys better and see what is happening on the Zoom screen. I think that's about it.
Oh, really nice setup. Really nice.
Yeah, it's nice, man.
Thank you. It's I don't know what I'm going to do with it from now on, but
it's very cool. No, I'm sure you'll put it to good use, you know.
Who worries about that?
Way to figure it out, too.
The only way to get this to work was to open QuickTime Player and start a movie in QuickTime Player and pick the sources, the camera source and the microphone source in QuickTime, and the QuickTime screen somehow makes it work, fools Zoom or the computer or something into seeing it as a camera, and then it runs that way. But it was very confusing. So that's it.
That's cool, man. Great presentation.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
You guys were a great audience. Thank you so much. It's really an honor and a pleasure, to say the least.
And we're 6 feet away.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Where's the cookies?
Yeah, oh. Well.
I got a long time home.
Just reach in here.
Yeah.
Actually, I prefer those. They're the low calorie kind.
Yeah.
These actually aren't. Kathy made these and they're really good. Where's
oh, them? Wow, there you go.
Oh, okay.
They're really good.
That's my style right there.
Give me some.
I'm not going to eat in front of you though.
I'm just about to make breakfast for everybody here.
Yes. What time is it now? It must be 6 in the morning.
No, it's 10 to 7 British summer time. Adds an hour.
Oh, right.
Oh, nice. Hey, Gordon, the lady, Susie was asking, have you ever worked at the old, what do they call it? Tea in the park?
Only working as a kind of grunt around the site a couple of times, because in the previous life I'm a plumber. So you can guess what I ended up doing.
Oh my goodness. Oh boy. All right, cool. I guess they don't do that anymore. They've stopped.
It stopped a couple of years ago because they moved site and the second site was rubbish compared to the original site. And it just couldn't cope with it.
Not too bad.
You should try and get to Glastonbury. If you're into big productions and things like that, you should go and see Glastonbury. I've worked there quite a lot with the TV people. It's a fun event.
Glastonbury,
it's the biggest festival in Europe, probably the biggest one in the world, really, that happens.
It's
Is that in Glasgow?
No, it's in South England. It's about 500 miles from here.
Isn't that usually in June?
Yeah, June, July, yeah. It's a big, big show. The infrastructure at that event is an amazing thing. There are some articles in various magazines and things about it. You should look it up.
It's very
impressive.
I think I've seen something on that. Is that a more than one day thing?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's
like
a weekend.
3-day weekend or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
Janie's going to go record it, right, Janie?
Well, I've seen it when I was in the UK in summer before. I haven't actually gone there because I've never been able to be there at the time, but I've seen ads for it and stuff. Is it happening this year?
No, none of the big festivals are happening at all this year. Glastonbury, I think, was taking a year out anyway. So, it's a man's farm, and he periodically has to let the land recover. Lately, he started the big field, the main fields that they have it in, which are huge, by British standards at least. They actually have drainage under the ground now. They have water supplies under the ground permanently. It's like, you know, there's an entire city network hides under the ground when it's a farm. Then they bring it all up when they're running the event.
Wow.
Well, I would love to see that. Maybe next year.
Look it up online. There's a lot of great articles about it. And it changes over the years and is ridiculously complex. It's remarkable.
How many stages do they have?
4 main stages and something approaching 40 or 50 other smaller tents and stages kicking around the whole site.
Wow.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun. I'll do that next year and I'll make it to Scotland on the same trip. I should be semi-retired by hopefully next in another year and a half. So
you should come over to the Edinburgh Festival, which happens in August, July, August.
I would love to. Absolutely.
That's a fantastic thing. You can see everything from little tiny pub gigs to theatre to pretty serious concerts for the sort of month that it's on.
I want to do that. Great. I'll look you up. Say hi.
Yeah, I'm usually working at it somewhere.
Yeah, great.
Let me know if you want any company, Bob.
All right, Janie. I'll hold the left channel. You hold the right.
It's been good to see you guys from the northwest of America. It's been a long time since I've been there, but maybe next time. Next time I'm out sailing or that, I might come up and see you.
Hey,
I hope so.
Awesome.
Well,
Maybe you can come to the another AES meeting if we, you know, if we do more of these, that would be, you could join us.
Us
from all over the place.
Greg, are you still here? What's our next month's meeting?
I don't know if I should announce it yet because I'm waiting on a confirmation.
Okay.
Yeah, sounds good.
And since a few people have dropped out, I'm going to respectfully suggest that maybe we start earlier next time, if that's a possibility.
Earlier than 7:30?
Yeah.
Start at 7.
We could.
Well, we were on before 7, I think.
Yeah, we started at 7:45.
Oh, I know you did. I know. I just got, I came on when I got the wink, so.
Yeah.
Certainly at this point, most people are not burdened with the lengthy commute.
That's right.
True. That's true. Yeah. That's a bonus.
And seeing as that we're on the West Coast and we're getting friends and people attending that are, you know, in the Midwest or wherever.
Yeah, which is great. Scotland.
That's true.
It's not a bad idea.
That's true. Gordon, what time would be a good time for you for us to do this?
10 hours before? No, that's fine. I know it's happening. I can deal with it. As an aside, one of my friends, a guy I knew from Scotland, stays in Seattle.
Oh, yeah.
A band, I think it's called Occam's Razor. I don't know if any of you have heard of them, kind of folk band. But he's gigging around up over there. But he's stuck in his house, I think, and not terribly.
Of course.
Everybody is.
Occam's Razor. And they're playing in the Seattle area? Or are they?
As far as I know.
Not now.
I only keep in contact with him through Facebook these days. I believe he's just joined the band, but I think he's been around for a little while.
Yeah, there's nobody playing anywhere now.
No. Mm-mm.
We're the same here.
Yeah.
So these people that say that they're playing together online, how can they do that with 100 milliseconds or variable latency? I don't think they really can they?
Yeah, it's quite easy to do, actually. It takes a bit of setting up, not unlike the Zoom meeting. But basically what you do is you have one master person, and they send a click track around, and the click track will arrive. There's a protocol called Audio Movers, and that can have really low latency. It won't do video, just does audio. And you do that, and then you actually record it the same way as you record the Zoom meeting, then you play it back. That's kind of how it's done.
So, but they can do like a chorus or something at the same, or play in same with each other? No?
Not live. It's usually live with a slight delay.
Uh-oh. Is the delay the same for all receivers from a source?
Well, I've got really fast internet here because I'm right beside a node, and the actual satellite station that the internet disappears off to is less than 1/2 mile from my house. Uh-huh. So I can get my delay and my latency on my internet down to 1 or 2 milliseconds if I really shut everything else off down in the house.
Whoa.
But, with audio movers, you can easily get it inside 10 milliseconds just for audio. Mm-hmm. So it's actually not that difficult to do. But what you usually do with it is get it to match your video latency, mm-hmm. and get it as close as you can. Mm-hmm. If you use a click track on a low latency line, everybody can play along. That's why you usually see them with headphones stuck in either in their ears or over their head, and that's what that's all about. They're not actually listening to themselves usually. They're usually listening to a click track to see what everybody else is at, and one person takes the lead of it, or one set takes the lead of it all.
Sound movers, huh?
Audio movers. It's just called Audio Movers. It's a subscription site. I use it quite a lot. I do a little bit, still do quite a bit of recording, or actually really what I do is I put soundtrack to video. And I mean, I'm kind of not doing that so much these days, but when I do, and it's handy because it's fast enough that you can run a video and say, does this sound good? Does that sound good? Do it in real time. You've usually got a phone video conference going on your mobile phone beside you, and you can adjust it as it's running, and it's much, much quicker than doing it by sending files around.
So they may be sending their video of their face, but they're not using any video cues. It's just, it's mainly the click track, and there is audio that they hear.
That makes sense.
Pretty much.
Wow.
That's really good to know, because I had a school that I do sound for contact me today and yesterday about doing something like what you're talking about for them. And so this is
somebody on the lab came up with the Audio Movers website just before I did it. It's on one of the links, but it's audiomovers.com.
Yeah. Okay.
You can subscribe it weekly. You don't have to subscribe for a year, but it is a pay service.
Right.
And if your internet's at all reliable, and yours seems to be because it stood up for that last 3 hours or so, mm-hmm. it will work.
Mm-hmm. I ran a wire to my incoming modem router thing through my house. I'm far away from it, but I have a long cable going directly to it. So this is a wired in connection.
Benjamin is asking where we might be able to see the recorded video of this. I'd imagine it would be announced that when it's ready.
Yeah, what I need to do is, well, there's two possibilities here. Gary is recording the Zoom stream, and I'm recording the QuickTime. I'm using QuickTime Player to record my presentation. And I did it earlier in the day and discovered that in 45 minutes, the audio was about 2 seconds almost off of the video.
Yeah.
So I got to, this is 3 hours or something here that we've been doing this. Mm-hmm. And so I need to edit that and get that happening. And we'll compare that to Gary's video to see which one is more enjoyable. And I have a YouTube channel called Dan Sound Seattle. And there's some AES meetings on that, a few, and this guy JJ, who us local people know, who's was one of the inventors of the MP3 and a really ridiculously smart guy, gave a couple talks on what is dynamic range, and those videos are on there. And there's a video of the Harry Parch musical instrument collection on there. That's the curator. What is he, Gary? The manager of it?
Chuck used to be the curator, and that they're no longer in residence at the university.
But doesn't he still have the instruments or control them or something?
I don't think he technically does. I think they're in storage.
Too bad.
Imola might know if he's.
Oh yeah, Doug.
Yeah, they're in storage up in Marysville.
Are there plans to somehow do something with them? Do you know what the Harry Parch instruments are?
Go ahead and tell. I worked with them for the past 4 years recording. Yeah,
I was asking everybody else, but you tell it.
Yeah.
You tell it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for the past 4 years, the original Harry Parch instruments, there's three ensembles around the world, one Germany, one LA. We had the original ones he made, and they were in residence at UW for about 4 years. And just due to financial problems, they were not able to sustain that. So Chuck is looking in the coming fall to find another home, another university to continue his work.
I hope he finds it. This Harry Parch invented all of these musical instruments and musical scales to put on them to perform ensemble, and they're really fascinating devices and instruments. And I recorded the talk, and that one has way over 20,000 hits, I don't know, or views, and people watch the whole thing. There's people who are super into Harry Parch, apparently.
That was a great evening.
Myself included. Yeah, another thing about those instruments is that they're not all of them, but many of them tend to be quite massive. So it's a big problem to figure out a place where they can be maintained.
And delicate too.
Yeah.
So anyway, so the video will at some point be on my YouTube channel, and we have an archive. The Pacific Northwest section has a website that Rick Chin and Dave Tosti Lane maintain. And there's a report of practically every meeting that we've had for at least the last 15 years, I'd say, maybe longer, maybe more like 20. And there'll be an audio recording of that. Gary, did we make an audio recording of this too?
Well, there's audio as part of the Zoom.
As part of the Zoom, yeah.
As well as a chat transcript.
Right. So I guess we'll put links to all of that on that archive meeting page. But we are a volunteer organization, so this is going to take some period of time to get together.
Dan, I'm going to have to jump off, but man, I think you just did a fantastic job. It was a lot of fun.
Agreed.
Thank you. This was great.
Bill, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Oh, sure.
All your help. That was... Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
No, it was fun. It was so much fun to kind of see everything coming in, and and the interest, and you know, the augmentation of the people in the crowd, you know, just kind of like the depth that's there is pretty amazing.
Well, that's why I love hearing from everybody. Yeah. To hear what they do, because there's always, we always have just great group of people and really knowledgeable folks.
So yeah, excellent job moderating, Bill. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, thanks.
Sure, no problem. All right, you guys.
Warm up our cars.
What's that?
We usually have to go outside and warm up our cars now.
Right. Right.
Exactly.
Right.
And then, you know, I have to stop by 7-Eleven to get enough pop and beef jerky to keep me awake on the drive home.
How far do you have to drive?
Well, I come from Federal Way, so it's like an hour.
Oh, geez.
An hour and whatever, depending on the traffic.
Well, I bet you're glad you don't have to do that tonight.
Oh, this is just awesome.
This is great.
I'm from Tacoma, and it was quite a drive whenever I used to attend regularly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I bet.
Yeah, you. Same thing. You're a little farther away than me, man.
Well, Cal comes up from Centralia.
Oh, gee. Yeah, yeah, I remember. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He could stop for you Olympia and Tacoma guys and bring you. That would be, he would be happy to do that, I know for sure. So I got a bail here, too.
All right, you guys.
All right.
Thanks, everybody. I appreciate it.
Have a good one, and thanks for doing this.
Great job.
Talk to you later.
Thank you. UI checkpoint in the kitchen. Be careful.
See you guys.
Bye.
All right.
Bye.
Good night.
And they're disappearing.
Thanks, Gary. You're awesome.
We still got
Greg.
Greg,
you're awesome
thank
too.
Thank you, Dan. Gary, thank you. That was really great.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Thanks for all your hard work on that. I think you set the bar pretty high, Dan.
Really? Well, I got to say, it felt kind of trivial to me in a lot of ways. But the challenge of doing it and thinking of all of that stuff and putting all of this stuff together has been really a fun project. And I appreciate the opportunity to do it, Greg. It's been really... really neat.
Well, good. Well, hope you all have a good night.
Thank you. Too.
Yeah, I'm gonna be in touch with Brian.
Okay.
Sorry. I wanted to be kind of have an idea of what was going on next month before the meeting today, but I'm still waiting on an email from Brian. And
gonna flake out on us?
No, I don't think
When I talked to him, he was pretty firm that he was going to
do it?
Yeah. Yeah, because I talked to him about running again for his position on the committee because his term is up. And he said, oh, I thought my position was up last year. That's why I haven't been participating.
Yeah. Yeah, but, well, I mean, he's obviously been following the conversation. Brian, you know, it's too bad that he couldn't have been more involved. He's my office mate, and we're really close and really good friends, and so.
Seems like a really good guy.
He's amazing.
And he's really smart.
Yeah, he's an amazing.
I'm sorry we weren't able to take more advantage of that.
Well, and, you know, it sounds like we will be able to potentially next month.
Yeah.
I think maybe what happened was maybe when he confirmed with you, he maybe thought he didn't need to, maybe he thought that was the confirmation. So.
I don't think so, because I told him he needed to work out with you, because there's no date. There's no date for it.
Right.
So he told me that he would be happy to do it and that it would be really easy for him to do it and that he could use Zoom or he named some other similar to Zoom program that he could use.
Okay.
And so I said, great. So talk to Greg.
Okay. Well, I'll follow up with him tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And have a good night.
You
I'm
too.
I'm going to sign off.
Okay.
All right.
Take it easy. Take Thanks. Care. Gary, you're a prince.
We'll find out if this recording is viable.
Yours and mine both.
And I don't know how long it'll take to process. I'll probably go to bed.
Yeah. Yeah, mine is probably going to be... Well, actually, when I recorded half the meeting, it took 13 minutes. I did that three times. And it took 13 minutes every time. So that, and I did it right at the intermission, the 15-minute intermission. So that worked out pretty good.
Okay. Are we done?
As far as I'm concerned, thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Good night. I will end the meeting.
All righty. Bye.